All right, welcome everybody. We are back for another year. We restart, and tonight we are doing a parshas on Parshas Elchanan. Why does Harrison Ford seclude himself on a ranch? We are just specifically we are focusing our we are going to dedicate first of all a tefillah for a young neighbor of Shana. Mason Ornstein, Moshe Reuven ben Sima Tebella, the 9-year-old boy who went up to Camp Levi and got hit in the chest with a ball and had a heart attack. And he's doing better, but we want to wish him a refuah shleima, yirat zon, v'nachum noleish, tishlach refuah shleima to Moshe Reuven ben Sima Tebella. And we'll dedicate our learning in his honor for a refuah shleima. Okay. So I want to begin with Harrison Ford. We start. Let us go to the videotape. All right. We'll now do share screen. Here we go. Here he is on Oprah, and it'll be self-explanatory.
Okay. I read. I don't know if this is true, but I read that you helped to supervise the building of the houses on the land in Jackson Hole that you are going to 4 days from now when the children are out of school. Okay, good.
I drew the buildings. I worked very closely on the construction of the house. A couple little cabins. Mm-hmm. No big deal. Mm-hmm. Nice little house for my little family. Mm-hmm. In Wyoming.
Got it. Did you teach yourself to be a carpenter years ago?
I did. I was under contract to Columbia Pictures, $150 a week and all the respect that it implies. Uh-huh. And then under contract to Universal for $250 a week. And I was wearing out my face on episodic TV. And what I really wanted to do was be in films. Excuse me. So I decided I needed another craft to so that I didn't have to accept every single acting part that came my way just to put food on the table.
Yeah.
And I had a house that I was remodeling, and I had the right clothes for it. Mm-hmm. So I went out and got a job as a carpenter. The first job I had was a $100,000 recording studio for Sergio Mendez in his backyard. And he forgot to ask me if I'd ever done it before. I didn't lie to him.
You didn't
he
lie.
He just forgot to
ask you.
I'm excited to give you an update.
All right. Okay. So you know, we think of Harrison Ford as being this, you know, ultimate, massive, most significant movie star, which he was, which he is, rather. But he started off for many years, literally 10 years in obscurity, you know, basically being like an extra. And so much so that he couldn't, you know, he was so insignificant within the movie industry, making $150 a week, $250 a week. It was not sufficient for him and his family, his wife and kids. And he picked up a new craft, as he said, which was to be a carpenter. I just want to read an additional statement from him. Yes. Okay, so let me just share screen on this. Let me just bear with me for a moment. Here we go. So let me just maybe Shana, can you read this? Can you see it clearly? This is a quote from him, which is pretty good.
"I'm old news. I've been there, Hollywood, for 35 years," Ford told Parade. "When I'm up in my Wyoming, I just walk out the door and keep walking. If my chores are done and there's nothing more pressing and the weather's good, I'll go flying. I love to fly up there or walk in the woods, do some work, ride my road bike or mountain bike. The couple loves entertaining their family at their property. Ford's 4 children from his first 2 marriages and teenager Liam, who just finished high school and is starting college this year. Ford told Land Report that one of his favorite parts about spending time at his ranch along Snake River, which he helped design, is just getting an escape. I need balance, he said. I need to be in a situation where my every whim is not attended to, where I have to fetch my own nails, do my own shopping, and wash my own dishes. Being normal is a kind of victory. I'll fix a fence, repair a piece of equipment, or plow the driveway if there's snow. There's always plenty of work to do.
Beautiful. Thank you. So, all right. So question number one, why does America's greatest action hero of all time want to be out of the LA scene and seclude himself on a ranch in Wyoming? Why does he want to do that?
Balance, sharpening the axe, being well-rounded, and health and wellness.
Yes. Now, why? He says something very weird. I need to be in a situation where my every whim is not attended to. Now, most people, you know, you go to a restaurant and you get to sit there and order food and the waiter brings it and you enjoy it. And whatever you need, you ask the waiter. And when you're done, you pay. And then you don't have to clean up. You don't have to wash the dishes. You don't have to put away the leftovers. You just walk out. So basically, when he's in LA, he's living that, you know, a butler and staff and everything is attended to. Most people would dream of that, but yet he doesn't want that. Well, why does he? I mean, Chaim, you said health and wellness. I mean, most people want?
I also, the idea of, I was going to say, and Chad, I didn't want to say, but yeah, an idea of humbling and being involved in the human experience, being grounded as a human being.
Now, it's interesting. His whole life, he wanted to be this famous movie star. And with all the...
But he never said he wanted to be for the fame and the fortune and for the glamour and the Hollywoodness.
Right.
For him, it was a measure of success and of a goal and a vision and being out there to be him where he wanted to be in life.
All right. Now, here's something also interesting. Why would an actor whose financial net worth is $200 million want to spend his day doing menial chores? You saw from the video, he's forking the hay, he's fixing the thing, or there's something specifically about the physical labor that he likes. And he could pay people to do every single thing. He has the money. You know, his financial net worth is $200 million, but he enjoys doing it himself. He wanted to design his whole thing, build his own house, build, you know. There's some. What is it about the physical labor component? We got to get into that a little bit. Shayna, you have a thought?
Well, first of all, he says being normal is a kind of victory. So I think that's like the underlying psychological piece of all of this, that mental approach or mindset to all of it. But there's also something very satisfying when you do the work yourself, as opposed to just writing a check and having someone else do the work for you.
Yes. So, I mean, I'm sure he feels I'm sure he felt satisfaction on doing the Star Wars movies and the Raiders of the Lost Ark and all the other, and all the dozens of classics that came after that he was involved in. But there's a part of that sort of, like, as you said, being normal. I want to be in Nords. I want to be a regular person. I want to get my own stuff, do my own shopping, build, you know, fetch my own nails, and have the experience of just being a regular guy. So it's very interesting. Most people would imagine, if I was Harrison Ford and I could have everything, I would live in a bazillion-dollar mansion in Beverly Hills. I'd have a whole staff. I'd have, you know, I wouldn't do anything. And here's a guy who had that, still has that, but likes just the opposite. He wants to be regular. He wants to wash his own dishes. He wants to be a regular person, because the otherwise, and we've had the class in the past by Robert Redford. What happens when people stay in Hollywood?
They get swallowed up in vain and hevel habalim.
But what happens to them? Right now, one of the big movies out is the Elvis biopic. You know, very good. It's a little sad. I enjoyed it. What happens to most celebrities. What happens to them?
Their celebrity overpowers them, and it's all about the fame, the bigger this, the greater that, but then there's also the turn to drug and alcohol abuse.
Right. So the irony is, and that's why I selected Harrison Ford, because he has a special wisdom here, which we're going to further explore. He recognizes that that fantasy, that fame and fortune actually destroys you. Because first of all, if you invest all that, I'm the beloved celebrity, there's a tremendous emptiness that comes out, because when you were obscure, you wanted to be recognized. When you're recognized, there's a certain emptiness that comes there. And what oftentimes people do is that they will fill that emptiness with, drinking and drugs. And, you know, and all kinds of partying, which, of course, is a lifestyle that basically ends up them either being dead or tremendously messed up with psychological problems. He had the wisdom of, in a certain sense, basically recognizing that that's not good. The irony is, to be regular is good. Wash your own dishes. Get your own nails. Don't be, in other words, he's in Wyoming. There's no cameras. He's got his kids. He's got his own hay, got horses. He also enjoys his money. He's not being, he had this following line. Everybody see the screen over here? It's a quote from Harrison Ford. Money is really only important if you don't have any. So, which means that even though his financial net worth is $200 million, what has he come to recognize? What is he recognizing about the money?
It's just a tool and a way to take actions and to use just in daily life and for whatever he needs it for. It's something of trade, something of value. This exchange value to help get him to something, get his needs met.
But the fantasy of amassing massive wealth. What is he? What has he personally experienced? Because he was a guy who had no money.
Because he realized, or maybe he knew beforehand, money doesn't buy happiness, and money, it's nice to have, but it helps. You could help stuff, but it only really, for the basic needs of food, shelter, and clothes, transportation, whatever our basic needs are, that's where it's most important. After that, it's just another thing.
So, exactly correct. This is something that people, I think, intellectually know, but it's very helpful to have somebody who's been on both sides of the fence. He was a guy who was working with very small bit parts, insignificant. He was an insignificant TV player, like, people on soap operas, people that you'll see them, you don't recognize them. They're like the unrecognizable people making basically no money being an actor.
The extras, the daily workers,
the people who are like into the 75th person on the credit roll. You know what I'm saying? Insignificant actors and actresses playing insignificant roles in insignificant movies and TV. Okay. Hollywood is filled with these guys. And of course, they make no money. But he was so much to be mentioned, he had to pick up an additional trade, in which he did. And then he got discovered by the movie American Graffiti, a good movie, and then Star Wars, and then Raiders of the Lost Ark, etc. So he went from no money to a huge amount of money. And he recognized that, as Chaim pointed out, once your basic needs are met, it doesn't do anything for you. You don't feel any happier. In fact, most people, it actually hurts them because it gives them lots of choices which they don't have the wisdom to navigate. And oftentimes they make bad choices which are harmful.
So exactly. When you mentioned the $200 million, it reminded me of the lottery episode share you gave.
Correct. Right. In the case of the sudden wealth, he's another example. But what I'm sharing with you, he's the outlier. he's the exceptional guy. Because he recognized, if I'm going to live, so did Robert Redford, I can't live in Beverly Hills. Or, you know, I can't live in L.A. I'm going to be crushed. I'm happier and I'm happiest when I'm basically living in a small, you know, living in my ranch in Wyoming. Now, you get onto another thing. So how would you summarize Harrison Ford's therapeutic plan to counter fantasy-based temptations of fame and great wealth? How would you summarize his life? What's basically, how would you summarize it? What's his secret of success?
And money is just a tool, just like time is a tool, and enjoying life and being normal.
Right. Be normal. Do not get sucked into the Hollywood fame and fortune. It's an empty hallway. You're not going to get anywhere. And the success is really to avoid it. And as Pierre says, who is wealthy? Person who's happy with what they have. And he's happiest, ironically, being a regular guy. When he was a carpenter working part time. Now, we'll get to a specific episode. Now, this is a little bit of a more detailed question. How do you think Ford's experience of being twice divorced before his current successful marriage might have led to a therapeutic plan for life? He's currently married to the actress from Sex and the City, Calista Flockhart. He's been married to, I think, 20 years now. The hell, you know, they have a good marriage. I mean, they're not divorced. His other marriages failed. Unfortunately, he had a good marriage initially, but unfortunately, I don't know for sure. I'm not their therapist, but apparently it was going great when he was away on location for Star Wars. Apparently had, as a 33-year-old man, he had an affair with a 19-year-old Carrie Fisher, a.k.a. Princess Leia, which, of course, did not do wonders for his marriage. It then ended. So what do you think he what did he learn? What do you think he learned from all this? Now he has a successful marriage, but going back to his first two failed marriages, what do you think he learned about?
There was nothing noble in being the Hollywood star getting all the women.
Right. So the crazy thing is, if you would tell a guy you can have any woman with no strings attached, gorgeous women, and, you know, an endless stream, most guys say, yeah, it's a great idea. What did it actually do to him? What did it do to his life?
Gave him a wake up call.
Yeah, there was a woman and who worked. In other words, since he was like an actor and also a carpenter, so his wife had to work outside the home to support the family. Also, they couldn't make it, so she worked hard while supporting him as a unknown actor. And then he becomes known, and then he was unable to overcome all the tremendous temptation, and fortunately, the marriage failed. So, again, the desire, the fame and the fortune, ironically, ruined something which was good. He was, you know, it was too much temptation. He couldn't handle it. And now he realized that was stupid. And now he has a stable relationship with, and he lives separate from all, and that's another reason why he's not living in L.A. most of the time as much as he can. Because it's not going to bring out the best in you. You know what I'm saying? Now, what does this have to do with the Parsha? So in this week's Parsha Veschanan, Moshe Rabbeinu recounts key events. The significant event in this week's Parsha, of course, is the giving, the revelation at Har Sinai, the giving of the Ten Commandments. And we have, of course, the 10th Dibra, which, Shana, B'vakasha, read it out.
The 10th commandment. Lo tachmod, do not covet tachmod of your neighbor's house. Do not be covet of your neighbor's
house. Take it out. Do not covet.
Do not covet of your neighbor's wife, his slave, his maid, his ox, his donkey, or anything else that is your neighbor's.
Okay, so we have a famous myth of the low tachon of not coveting, which we're going to define carefully, which the Torah says not to covet, desire, whatever, want improperly. We'll get to the exact parameters of that in detail. The basic items, the person's house, wife, slave, maid, ox, donkey, anything else, okay? So does the mitzvah of Lo Tachmo fit into Harrison Ford's therapy approach? Would he now agree with this? Is Lo Tachmo fit into Harrison Ford's current worldview or not?
I would say yes, it does.
How?
LA is the land, or Hollywood, California, whatever part of it you want to reference. It seems to be the land of temptation with vices and such, and people always needing to show the bigger, the better. Oh, just because you have like this diamond, well, I'll have that bigger diamond, or you have this house, well, I'll have that bigger house with that greater view. And so he removed himself from that. Therefore, I would say it's like, so he himself can't want what other people have or try to outdo what other people have.
Exactly correct. In other words, his best, he's just limited. In other words, he's recognizing he's been blessed and not trying to desire what which does not belong to him and want and try to get what that which does not belong to him. He didn't realize this initially. He may have had to learn it the hard way. But this is the Torah help. One of the things that the Torah does, it helps us live life lessons that you may come to yourself, but you may take you 5, 10, 15, 20 years of mistakes. So Hashem helps us out by creating a shortcut that if you follow this life plan, you will be happier. Guaranteed. Because you're not going to fall into the traps that these other people have fallen into. Elvis, Harrison Ford, so many other people. Now, Harrison Ford is a great guy because he, on his own efforts, made mistakes and learned from them. And he deserves a lot of credit for that. Most people do not. Okay, so let's get into now. That's in the Lo Tachmo is mentioned twice. First in Parshas Yitro. And now we're going to read this with Parsha. Shana Bavakasha, read it out.
This is Moshe's review of the Aseret Hadibrot in Devarim. For Lo Tachmod and Lo Titaveh. Do not covet Tachmod, your friend's wife. Do not desire Titaveh, your friend's house, his field, his male or female slave, his ox, his donkey, or anything else that belongs to your friend.
Okay, so looking at the Pasuk, what is the basic question that we have to answer on the Pasuk?
What's the difference between covet and desire?
There you go. The Torah now, the seed, and not only that, Moshe seems to be adding something. Hashem didn't mention this before. What is he adding? He seems to be adding to the Torah. What's going on over here? Okay, so the Torah Shebaal Peh explains these two, these are actually two separate commandments of the Torah, and the Rambam describes them. 1 second. Okay, let's go to Halacha 9. Shana, the only person I can see, you are able to read.
Anyone who covets a servant, a maidservant, a house or utensils that belong to a colleague or any other article that he can purchase from him and pressures him with friends and requests until he agrees to sell it to him violates a negative commandment even though he pays much money for it. As Exodus states, do not covet. The violation of this commandment is not punished by lashes because it does not involve an action. One does not violate this commandment until one actually takes the article he covets, as reflected by Deuteronomy or Devarim. Do not covet the gold and silver on these statues and take it for yourself. Implied is that the Hebrew tachmod refers to coveting accompanied by a deed.
Okay, so Lo Tachmo, the Rambam teaches us that It's not just simply I desire something that, let's say I see somebody's got a beautiful dress and I like that dress. Is that, have you violated low talk mode? If you say, oh, they got a nice dress, I want that dress. What do you got to do?
It's going up to that person and say, I like your dress. I'll pay you for that dress. How does, let's say, $100 to start sound? And the person who's wearing the dress or owns the dress says, no, it's not for sale. It's not for sale. And the other person like says, I'll give you this much money, or gets friends involved and says, please help me. I really want this dress that this person has. Please help me convince her to sell it to me.
Exactly. Low talk mode is the campaign of extracting something which is not for sale and pressuring them to sell something they don't want to sell. Exactly correct. Let's keep on going. Now the Ron brings down another thing. Go on.
Anyone who desires a home, a wife, utensils, or anything else belonging to a colleague that he can acquire from him violates a negative commandment at the time he thinks in his heart, how is it possible to acquire this from him? And his heart is aroused by the matter. As Devarim states, do not desire. Desire refers to feelings in the heart alone.
Okay, so now the Rambam says that the mitzvah of lo taveh is what? Well, how does that fit into lo tachmod?
So I would say this is the first step.
Correct.
There'd be two steps to lo tachmod, or to coveting something. And the first step is saying, I like that. I want that. How do I get that? And then the low tachmod part, or the covet part, would then become the, as you called it, the campaign for obtaining it.
Exactly. So low tataveh is working out a plan. How is it possible to acquire an artist? Look at an artist, you're saying, who should I speak to get this woman to sell me her gorgeous dress? She doesn't say a word. It's all happening in her mind. She's planning it out. She's scheming. Lo tataveh is I desire something, and I work out a scheme to extract it. Lo tachmod is executing your plan and being successful to get it. We continue on. One more halacha. Two more halachas. Go ahead.
Rabbi, can I insert a question?
Yes. Two questions. Go ahead.
So let's say the person who wants the dress sees someone with the dress and goes up to her and says, hey, where did you get this? And then goes about acquiring it from the store or online shop. How would that fall into this?
No problem at all. That's called shopping. You can ask, so you know, you could say, by the way, it's a lovely dress. I really like it. I'm definitely in the market for it. If you're willing to sell it to me, I'd love to buy it. Or if you can direct me to the store or online marketplace that you got it from, great, no problem. It's when lo taveh and lo tachmod starts when the person says no. When the person says no, then you got an issue. And then you work, and then I know her pressure points. I'm gonna work out a plan. We're going to do three examples of how to get it, to extract it out. Let's keep on going.
Desire leads to coveting, and coveting leads to robbery. For if the owners do not desire to sell, despite the offer of much money and many supplications by friends, the person motivated by desire will be moved to robbery. As Micha states, they coveted houses and stole. And if the owner stands up against them to save his property, or in another way prevents the person motivated by desire from robbing, he will be moved to murder. Take, for example, the narrative of Ahav and Navot.
Okay, so I'll just share you the story in short. King Ahav was the king of the northern kingdom. He had his kingdom, he had his palace in the Shomron. We were in, those who were with me in the fellowship, we went to the Shiloh winery, and we were in Shiloh. That's in the Shomron, the northern part of what people call the West Bank. So he's there, and next to his palace is a beautiful vineyard. Again, back at the time of the Chumash, that was the Tanakh, that was wine country, And for 2,000 years, it was nothing growing there. And now, again, part of the fulfillment of the biblical prophecies, it is now wine country. And those who had the joy of joining me at the Shiloh wine, winery, they're producing some of the finest wine in the world. So he wanted that next door vineyard. Goes up to Navot. He says, Navot, will you sell me your thing? I'll either give you, and he'll give you option. I'll give you cash. I'll give you a equal or better vineyard elsewhere. Whatever you want, you tell me. You name the price. You here's the check. You write the check in. And Navot said, Chalila Hashem, far be it that I'm going to give up my ancestral land. This is our ancestral inheritance. The Torah says you do not give that up unless you're in the, you know, at the edge of poverty. Ahab is completely depressed. He goes home, lies on the couch, lies on his bed, faces the wall, completely depressed. Ahab has a wife, a convert, a queen, what we call in English Jezebel or Hebrew Izebel. And she's like, why are you so sad? He tells the story, says, don't worry, I'll take care of it. Anyways, she works it out that poor Navot is trumped up with false charges of murder, gets him executed. And the rule was that those people are executed, the property goes to the king. And so Ahav has the new vineyard. Then we have Eliyahu the Navi. Eliyahu the prophet comes in there as Ahav is enjoying his beautiful vineyard, which is adjacent to his gorgeous palace. And he says the famous words in the Tanakh, Ratzachta v'gam yarashta. You murdered and then you inherited. Eliyahu called them out on it. So basically, it started with a titaveh, a plan. I need to get this vineyard, coveting, forcing him to do it. And ultimately, when Avot said no, he was basically assassinated with the help of his evil wife, Izebel. We get to, so let's finish off the law of 12, and we'll go on to a few cases. Go ahead.
Thus, we see that a person who desires another person's property violates one negative commandment. One who purchases an object after he desires, after pressuring the owners and repeatedly asking them, violates two negative commandments. For that reason, the Torah prohibits both desiring and coveting. If he takes the article by robbery, he violates three negative commandments.
Okay, so the Torah views it as can be a progression. Okay, so we already just, that basically you have a plan, you try to execute a plan with Lo Sachmo, but when a person is completely obsessed with getting it, well, then they even go to robbery or even murder. Okay. Here's the key thing. This is a very important question. Question number two, what is the state of mind that attracts a person to do all these evil actions? Why do they have to do it?
Somebody who's not happy with what he or she has.
So why does it result in getting the that person's the dresses we started with. You're right. So they're under dissatisfied with what they have, but is that it? So I believe that what you're bringing is step one. Step two is they have this firm belief that if they have this object, they will be complete. And the second thing is that they are entitled, or they should have the dress. They should have the vineyard. They should have all of it. And therefore they can't tolerate the other person having it.
So, Rabbi, I was going to ask, in that aspect, does that play into Freud's id, child, I want, ego-wise also?
I would say, yes. I mean, you could, if you want to use it, put it into a Freudian sense, that the person is fixated in a very childish state where they believe, like a little baby, the 3-year-old kid who sees you eating a cookie, Right. Now, who has had this experience, either babysitting or visiting your nieces and nephews? You're eating a cookie and the kid will walk up right there and just simply take it from you. Who has had that experience? Okay. They'll just take the cookie because in the 3-year-old mind person, that cookie belongs to them. Saying, all right, so let me flesh this out a little more. Let me give 3 scenarios, which will bring this, I think, into a contemporary manner. Okay, so let's take a look at scenario number 1. Miriam MGEer shares with her friend Esther that her parents are allowing her to assume the lease for their amazing rent stabilized apartment in the Upper West Side. Miriam mentions that her best friend Stacy will be joining her as a roommate. Esther finds herself very envious of Stacy and becomes filled with plans to get Miriam to invite her in as a roommate instead. Esther begins to share Lashonara about Stacy to get Miriam to drop Stacy and choose her as a roommate instead. At what point does Miriam violate desiring lo titaveh and coveting lo tachmod? Okay, and here's a picture of the gorgeous apartment. This is a gorgeous rent-controlled Upper West Side on Central Park, rent-controlled apartment. Gorgeous, gorgeous. Okay, so when did Miriam violate lo titaveh and lo tachmod? Let's see if you guys understand the halacha.
When she started to devise a plan, or had the intention to.
Yeah, so she starts to make the plan Esther. Mistake. When does Esther violate? Esther violates when she starts working out a plan to do what? Julie, fill it. Just express a little more.
I believe that she went ahead and decided she coveted, so to speak, the apartment in the beginning. And then she said, I don't remember her exact wording. She was going to go ahead and devise some kind of plan in order to get the apartment or to have her be the roommate or.
Yeah. To have Miriam drop Stacy and pick her. In other words, and so her plan was, I'm going to badmouth, say, Lashon Hara to Miriam about Stacy, and therefore she'll select me instead. So when she has the plan in her mind, that's lo titaveh. When she implements the plan, that's lo tachmod. Now, how would Harrison Ford, now full circle, advise Esther in the proper way to release herself from this destructive path? If Harrison Ford could sit down with Esther and after he knows what's going on, what do you, based upon what we've learned about Harrison Ford, what would he say to her?
Get a life.
get a life. Okay. Get a life. Is that true?
Meaning that there's more, like there's other things to worry about and, and she's coveting and she's taking action against someone who, like, it's just the whole situation is ridiculous. So, and there's
in other words, getting the rent controlled apartment is not the secret to your success. You will not, it's not going to make you any happier. The fact that you're paying, less, who doesn't want to spend less money on rent? Everybody. But the bottom line is, by doing so, you're destroying Stacy, destroying. Manipulating Miriam, you're crushing people, and your life is going to be no iota better when you're in the apartment. You're going to be the same person, and just the worst. There'll be a person that actually did evil actions to destroy others to get a cheaper apartment. That's what your life's about. So he might give her specific examples where he himself felt that temptation and overcame it, or failed and now realized that was stupid. You know what I'm saying? The Torah does legislate how we're supposed to feel. Like, in other words, yeah, just because we desire it doesn't mean it's good for us. And you got to think about it. Is it good? Okay, scenario number 2. All right. Stan MGEer loves vintage Corvettes, the power, the look, and the ease of making modifications. America's dream car. His buddy Chaim, has a 1963 Chevy Corvette Stingray and looks like this. Let me check it out. That's a gorgeous car. Stan must have this car. The going rate is around $60,000. Stan offers him $75,000. Chaim says this car is not for sale. Stan gets all of Chaim's buddies to nudge him to sell. They remind him that he needs the cash for other things. After 3 months, Chaim relents and sells the car. At what point does Stan violate desiring and coveting? Lo titaveh and lo tachmod. What do you guys say? When does Stan violate lo titaveh and when does he violate lo tachmod?
So I think lo titaveh is the when he says they must have this car and the initial offering of $75,000 and the lo tachmod is
when he goes to Chaim and says, Chaim, you have a gorgeous car. I'd love to own it. Would you consider $75,000? And Chaim then says, no, it's not for sale. At that point, has Stan violated any halacha whatsoever? All right, Julie, what do you say? Your hand is raised. Okay. So at that point, I don't think Stan has violated anything because right now he just offered money for a product. Once Chaim says it's not for sale emphatically, okay, then Stan works out a plan to get Chaim's buddies to nudge him. That's when he's violating lo titaveh. Working out, and then when he gets them to do it, that's lo tachmod, okay, coveting. And then he gets the car through his campaign of nudging. And Harrison Ford, as we mentioned, would say, hey, dude, I own many cars. Your life is not going to be, it's nice to have a nice car. Nothing wrong with a nice car. But to crush somebody to get it, your life is not going to be fundamentally changed by having this car. You know, Stan without a 1963 Corvette Stingray or with one is fundamentally same Stan. And if you're going to crush Chaim in the process and manipulate him life is not going to be any better. It's a fantasy that you need to be mature, as Chaim pointed out, overcome that childish mentality. Last scenario, or we call it a night. Stacy MG is staying with her friend Nancy in accounting at her company Environ. She happens to see the confidential profit report sharing that the company has made 73% over last year and that there will be a hefty distribution to stockholders. Stacy decides to ask her boss for a raise. She is turned down. She's furious. I am slaving away and they can't even throw me a few crumbs, she exclaims. She goes on a business trip and she decides that she can get away with inflating her travel expenses by $800. How the Rambam in Halacha 11 explains Stacy's path to theft. There's, of course, the pile of $800 that she's going to steal from the company with her inflated business expense. How did Stacy end up being a thief? What was her path, as the Rambam explains, to theft? Otherwise a good person. How did this happen?
Having worked in corporate before, it's very easy when you're given an expense account to to spend. And if she was that aggravated, I'm not saying she did the correct thing, but if she was that aggravated, she could very well have just submitted receipts and taken advantage of the policy.
So the ease of getting away with that is a temptation for everybody. But she had, but what the Ron pointed out, she has a backstory. First of all, she sees the company's making enormous amount of money. Two, second thing is that she was turned down for a raise. So at that point, how does she feel? This is the most important part of the low talk mode experience.
Unworthy.
How does the person who is experiencing low stav and low talk mode feel about the object? How do they feel about it?
About the object or about the situation?
About the cash in this case, the $800.
Angry.
Not only angry, but how does she feel about that money?
Entitled.
It's her money. These fat cats don't care about me. I'm working like a dog. They don't want to pay me what's due. She feels that that money belongs to her already. The same way that Stan feels that Corvette belongs to him already. And the way that Esther feels that apartment belongs to her already. So she feels entitled. So that allows her first to desire it, work out a plan to get it, execute it, and then ultimately steal for it. So the low talk mode is about when a person has the obsessive compulsive desire to take something which doesn't belong to them and work out a plan to, even to buy it, is a childish feeling that the terror demands that we have to overcome. And we brought the example of Harrison Ford because he personally went through the low talk mode, you know, education of life. And he realized that he learned this idea naturally from his own life experiences. The Torah gives us a tremendous gift. It gives us mitzvos that gives a life of success. You don't have to learn the hard way. You don't have to learn through experience. You can learn by just, you know, coming on a Tuesday night, analyzing low talk mode and not falling into the trap of making the terrible decisions that Esther and Stan and the rest have made. So that's the idea. Any questions? All right. So I wish everybody a wonderful evening. Stay cool out there. It's been brutally hot in the New York area. And of course, hopefully Mason will have a refuah shleimah bekarov, and we should meet together next Tuesday night on Weeks for our next celebrity. All the best, guys. Laila Tov.
Thanks so much, Rabbi Penny. Laila Tov, everybody.
Got it.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Laila Tov.